Committee on Local Government and Elections will convene as a subcommittee until we get a quorum. We'll start. First bill on the agenda is Senate File 1450. Senator Carlson. Welcome to the committee. Can you state your name for the tape and present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, I'm Senator John Carlson, and as you indicated, we have Senate File 1450 before you today. With me testifying for this bill is Mr. Kent Sulem from the Minnesota Association of Townships and Mr. Craig Johnson from the League of Minnesota Cities. And I think at this point, I will turn this over to Mr. Sulem for an explanation of the bill.
Sulem, state your name for the tape, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Sulem, General Counsel with the Minnesota Association of Townships. This bill is actually a collaborative effort between the Township Association, the League of Cities, and the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, working at the request of Senator Carlson to address an issue that most recently arose in his district, dealing with the process of detaching property from a city and returning it back to the township. And we sat down a year ago and hammered out a draft bill that was introduced at the very end of session. We asked our respective memberships to look at it and other groups to take a look over the summer and bring us back any comments. We reviewed it with the department, the Office of Administrative Hearings. Chief Judge Krause is here to answer any questions. The amendment that will be offered, I believe shortly, addresses two technical requests they had. Very quickly, what the bill simply does, under Section 1, it clarifies what has to be in the petition for a detachment, setting forth the reasons asking for the land to go out of the city back to the township, so there's a clear justification for what's being requested. Section 2 gives the township an official voice. Under current law, the town is affected by the detachment, and as practice, they are brought into the hearing as the receiving party, but they have no official voice before or during the proceedings. They have to wait to be called essentially as a witness party by the administrative law judge that hears the petition. So this establishes that the township has the right to either oppose the detachment, saying this land isn't right to come back, we support it, we want it to come back, or we're neutral. If you give it to us, we're happy to take it, but this isn't our fight. Whatever you decide is good with us. It just clarifies that we actually do have a role. Section 3 clarifies the hearing process, allowing a petition to go forward, creating a streamlined if there is no opposition, if there's a city support and no opposition from the township, allowing things to be a little more streamlined. Section 4 just clarifies the things that are considered by the Office of Administrative Hearings and what goes into the findings. And Section 5 just clarifies what has been a fair amount of practice, but just basically saying, look, the assumption is a 50-50 split of the cost. The petitioning party, that landowner, pays half, the city is paying half, and if other parties get involved, then the judge has the discretion to determine what's the equitable way to distribute costs. But it creates that rebuttable presumption of a 50-50 cost split so that anybody making an effort understands tax dollars aren't going to fund the whole thing. You've got a dog in this fight. That's the bill as it's being brought forward. Do you wish me to address the amendment? I know it hasn't been moved, but...
The quorum is now present. The meeting will come to order, and Senator Chamberlain moves the A3 amendment. This is an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape you'd like it in. Any discussion to the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very quickly, the amendment makes a number of technical corrections, replacing the word township with town. While we refer to our members as townships, the legal entity is a town, and it's a semantic change, but it is to make sure that we're clear on the legal titles, just makes that change throughout the existing statute. We took out a provision regarding affected by the detachment in the existing bill, so it's clear that the notice of the petition goes to the abutting properties, the entities, the city and abutting township, and removes the ambiguity of who else could be affected. And that was a request that came from the Office of Administrative Hearings. clarifies as the county recorder, who is the official recipient at the county level. Changes the word annexed to attached because that's the proper terminology for statute. And changes court having jurisdiction to the Office of Administrative Hearings because OAH is who has jurisdiction under the current statute. And so we're just making things consistent. With that, I'm happy to take any questions. I don't know if Mr. Johnson has anything further to add.
Any questions? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, if someone wants to detach from a city, so this is to detach from a city and go back to a township.
Correct.
And I don't know if this is frequently done, but would they have had to have been part of the township at one time, or could someone who's been part of a city within the city limits for years and years be eligible to take their property and move it out of a city and into a township?
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, they do not have to have prior been a part of the township. This is commonly kind of reviewed as a reverse annexation, if you will, but the city has, you know, the right to object and say, hey, this is a problem. But I believe the situation that arose in Breezy, Mr. Johnson perhaps can give more details, was a case where they had been in the city. I don't think there had ever been a township issue since the city had been incorporated. They had been in the city, but they were a rural area looking to go back. We had one last year that was not objected to strongly, where several years ago, some of you may remember, we merged two townships in a city into one city, the city of Rockville outside of St. Cloud. And there was a property there that, by the prior town's planning, by the city's zoning, would always be ag, wanted to be ag, has never been anything but ag. They detached into the abutting township that had never been involved before, but because of the way the boundaries changed when we merged three into one, they now detached into a new township because that's who was the abutting party. They'd never been part of that township before, but they were now the abutting community. So that's how it would work.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
And I'm assuming they have to be contiguous or on the border of the township. So if another property owner who was just inside that it wanted to come into a township, they'd have to convince their neighboring property owner maybe to also come in on a petition with them so that they could go together. Can you do more than one at once? Could a group of property owners do this together?
Mr. Saul.
I actually have to double check that myself. So it just talks about the petition. Perhaps that would be a good.
Mr. Johnson, would you like to add to this?
Mr. Chair, members, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Yes, we do have instances where multiple parcels come in together on a petition. And in fact, that is one of the situations that happened that triggered our need to work on this issue, was multiple parties coming in together. And as long as at least one of the parties is on the exterior boundary of the city, you can have other parcels that abut them. The other problem, of course, is once that detachment occurs, there's a new outside edge to the city, and future detachments can happen from that boundary.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, if you look at the existing language in Section 1, it does, with the language that's being proposed, does clarify that it's the petition sets forth all the boundaries and the affected landowners. So that is the way we have it initiated. So if you had five neighbors that all submitted one petition, as long as they are all in agreement, you could not have a situation where you're trying to detach hostily land that not the property owner is not asking to be detached. So you couldn't take your neighbor's parcel with you hostily.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Further discussion, Mr. Johnson, did you have any testimony?
Mr. Chair, members, again, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Also, my comments reflect the work that the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities did with us, and Bradley Peterson from their organization is here if you have further questions of him. We worked on this with the Township Association for quite some time to come up with language. There were actually concerns about this procedure from both angles. Townships were not really formally a part of this process, which doesn't make a lot of sense if someone's trying to leave a municipality and move to the neighboring township, and they might bring road responsibilities and other things with them. It seems to make sense that the township should be included in that as a party if they choose to be. And secondly, the process wasn't working very well for cities. It was really a very short list of things to be considered. Is it still rural in character? Is it appropriately on the border? And basically, we cities didn't have a lot of room to make a case for how that property should maintain as a part of their municipality. So we tried to address the process in a way that does not make substantial changes other than to the process. How are we going to make these decisions in a more thorough way about where we're going to change boundaries? And we're very supportive of it. It's a rare circumstance. You've got cities and townships up here saying that we both support an annexation bill.
Hey, Senator Kulesh.
Yeah, I'm sorry I was a little late, so maybe this has been covered, but just can you explain why these people want to detach, and can you just go through why the process needs to be altered and kind of the who wins, who loses, or how that is in the mix between cities and townships or the, you know.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kulesh, it varies a great deal, the motivations, and you know, motivations aren't actually always very clear anyway, but we do have people that change because they feel that their property is rural in character and is never going to change from that, that there is not any likelihood or desire on their part to have future development of an urban nature in their property, and so they want to detach to a township. That's one type of case. There's others where it's done to get out of an area that otherwise might soon have large assessments or something coming toward it because of extension of municipal services that are planned for the area. There's cases where it's done because people are mad at their neighbors and want to separate for you know, more personal reasons. So there's a lot of different reasons. It is becoming more frequent right now as people look for ways to address both their property and their tax base and things of that nature. So we thought it was an appropriate time to address this before it really becomes an issue that has hundreds of occurrences a year. But it has occurred more often in the last few years than prior to that. It used to be fairly uncommon.
Mr. Chair, what I'm wondering about is if a city invested in infrastructure for that particular area and then that a landowner said, I don't want to pay for that, and annexed out, how does the city recoup that investment they made into that area? And is there any allowances for that in this? So,
Mr. Chair and Senator, right now that would be something that the administrative law judge would look at. So, in other words, if services have already been extended to the site, I'm sure that would be a significant factor in the judge's administrative law judge's look at the case. We actually make sure in this process that is an explicit requirement that is looked at as one of the factors, but also that already adopted local comprehensive plans and things of that nature are all included in this as well. Because frequently when a person would try and potentially detach is when the local community approves a plan to move forward with something that they don't want to be a part of. And then they would start a detachment, which, of course, the plan is already in place for the local government to be working in that direction. So it gets very messy in a hurry. So that's actually the new requirements for what is evaluated in here of completed plans. We also do have language in here that says that there has to be a clear record established that they have worked in other ways to have their concern addressed with the local unit of government, not just that they're immediately trying to get out of one local unit into another local unit to escape some sort of planning requirement.
Mr. Chair. So Senator Carlson, this isn't intended to be more or less restrictive, but more to a discussion of the process that's used?
That is correct.
Thank you. Mr. Solem, did you have?
I was just going to, Senator Kulesh, if you look at line 3.3 of the existing law, it does say that the land is not needed for reasonably anticipated future development. So if a city had a development plan, had zoning ordinances, and it extended services, in all likelihood, I mean, you know, a judge has to look at each case, unique facts for that situation, but in all likelihood, if they've got services extended, it's covered by their comprehensive plan, it's covered in their map, that's going to be viewed as needed for future development, and therefore the detachment would not go through.
Thank you.
Landowners allowed to ask, but those concerns that you were raising are specifically addressed.
Thanks.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wanted to extend my appreciation to Judge Krause for coming today. And if there was any other questions about that, perhaps Judge Krause is available if there's questions.
Okay. Any further questions? No. Seeing none, further discussion. Anyone else here to testify for or against the Senate File 1450? Senator Roebling.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 1450 be recommended to pass as amended and sent to the floor.
Senator Roebling moves that Senate File 1450 be recommended to pass and placed on general orders. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Okay, next, second bill on the agenda is Senate File 1544. Senator DeCruz. Right. Senator DeCruz, welcome to the committee. Pronounce your name for the tape, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an A2 amendment that I might want to see handed out to get this bill in the shape that I'm looking for.
Is it's on a letter size piece of paper if you're looking for it. Does everyone have the amendment? Senator. Chair will move the A2 amendment. Senator DeCruz, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a city in my district, the city of Montgomery, that brought an issue to me that we're trying to solve with this piece of legislation, and it's something that I was unaware of. But this will allow counties, cities, towns, or other public corporations to lease or convey land to a congressionally chartered veteran organization for public use for less than market value. For purposes of this bill, a congressionally chartered veteran service organization is a veteran organization that has been granted a charter by the United States Congress. These organizations have been recognized and approved by Congress for their mission and work on behalf of veterans and their contributions to the communities they serve. For example, some of these organizations include, but are not limited to, the American Legion, AmVets, and the VFWs. This bill will require that the conveyance of land, a lease of the land, be approved by the local government body. The organization receiving this land cannot sell or lease a property for 5 years after receiving the land.
Okay, thank you. To the A2 amendment, members, any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Amendment's adopted. Do you have any testifiers?
I do. I have Mayor Gene Keel from Montgomery.
Good afternoon, Mr.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the tape, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Senate committee members. I'm Jean Keogh, Mayor of the City of Montgomery. Just by way of a little background information, in October of 2010, the Montgomery American Legion and the VFW were informed that they would have to relocate their Veterans Memorial, which up until that time was located on Montgomery Lonsdale School property. In 2010, the school district held a building referendum, which passed, and as a part of that building project, a new parking lot was planned for the site of the Veterans Memorial. So as a result, the American Legion and the VFW had to find a new home for their memorial. And the memorial at that point consisted of the American, Minnesota, and POW MIA flags and a granite monument. The American Legion and the VFW researched a number of different locations throughout the city of Montgomery and determined the best location for the Veterans Memorial to be a vacant lot that was owned by the city of Montgomery. Representatives of the American Legion and the VFW approached the city council requesting that we gift the property to the American Legion for the purpose of establishing their new Veterans Memorial. In their presentation to the city council, our veterans presented detailed plans for the new memorial, and it consisted of in expanding and enhancing the original memorial. In reviewing Minnesota Statute 465.035, the city learned that it could not convey the land to the American Legion. Even though the memorial would be enjoyed and visited by the entire community, the city by law simply could not gift the land to them. But the city council still desired to assist in relocating the Veterans Memorial to this site. So in the alternative, the city council entered into an agreement with the American Legion regarding the use and maintenance of the property. It was dedicated as a city park, and we named it Veterans Memorial Park. And this whole, in order to get to this, it added approximately 5 months to the entire process. The City of Montgomery supports Senate File Number 1544, authored by Senator DeKreif, to allow any county, town, city, or other public corporation to convey land to a chartered veteran service organization for public use when authorized by its governing body. We believe it should be the governing body's right to convey property to a veteran service organization if the property is to be used for a public purpose, such as paying tribute and honoring all veterans who have served our country. Today, many veterans organizations are financially challenged as they are dependent on memberships and donations, which can limit the scope of their projects. And in order to accomplish major projects such as establishing a veterans memorial or refurbishing one, they often depend on the assistance of those donations. Therefore, it is our hope that you will support Senate File Number 1544, giving local units of government throughout the state the ability to honor and express our pride in the veterans who have sacrificed and served our great nation. Our veterans organizations are the cornerstones of our communities, and this bill would allow us to collaborate on other projects with our veterans organizations, and it opens the door to us being able to partner with them. And that will result in not only stronger veterans organizations, but also stronger communities. And thank you for this opportunity and for your time today.
Thank you. Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With your permission, I just have a couple minor questions.
Certainly.
First of all, I'm a service member, so thank you for your support of our men and women. And Senator DeKreif, once upon a time, I did part of my student teaching at Montgomery High School, so I know where this memorial is at. Do I understand correctly that you did a workaround, and so the city is in this, in your scenario, the city is going to own the land, and that's how you sort of...
Yes, we entered into an agreement where the city owns the land. It's dedicated as a city park. We're going to do the park maintenance, and the American Legion is responsible for all the improvements and that kind of thing.
Mr. Chair, I feel like when I was on the council in Duluth that we did some similar things where we conveyed it for public use for a dollar. Was in my either my memory is incorrect, or was that not an option? Did it have to be at an assessed value?
The information that we had was that that Minnesota statute prevented us from doing that, that we had as a government entity convey it for fair market value.
Okay. And then Senator DeKreif, Mr. Chair, what's the 5-year scope about? What's magic about holding it for 5 years?
Senator DeKreif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Reinert. Actually, I actually suggested putting that in there just to keep any shenanigans out. Okay. If somebody was going to transfer land so it could be sold quickly or something, that's not what this bill is intended to do. And we wanted to make sure that we were going to give these veterans an opportunity, veterans organizations an opportunity.
Mr. Chair, just one final question. I like the direction you're headed. Ma'am, I liked your statement. I mean, at the end of the day, it is, I think, up to our local units to sort of manage their tax base. Senator, I understand why this bill is drafted pretty narrowly, and I understand why. I mean, you're addressing a specific situation, but I'm wondering if you gave thought at all to a little broader scope around conveying property for public use. And those were some of your words, ma'am, that I think are important. I mean, there might be other, for a local government, there might be other worthy projects besides just as much as I appreciate VFWs and Legions. There might be things broader than that, and I'm just wondering if you gave that thought and ruled it out for any reason.
Senator DeCray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Reinert. I really didn't consider going a lot farther because I wanted to try to narrow the scope as closely as we could. At times there can be unintended consequences, and I was trying to avoid some of the unintended consequences by narrowing the scope.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Robley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, when we say that it would have to be for public use, and I certainly understand a park that's open for anyone's use, but could it mean like the city would have an old city hall, they built a new city hall, and now they want to convey the old city hall to the veterans organizations for VFW club, which really, by some standards, are considered members-only facilities. Like when I go into my VFW club, I'm supposed to sign as a guest coming into the club. So it really wouldn't be, that wouldn't be considered a public use then, would it? Or what are we defining as public use?
Senator DeCray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Roebling. I never really thought about that possibility. I guess I'd be open to, if you had an amendment or something that you wanted to make that a little bit broader, if you have some thoughts on that.
Well, Mr.
Senator Roebling.
And I'm not sure if I want that or not. I'm just wondering if that could happen under this. You know, I know that the clubs, they're restaurants, they're dance halls, they offer catering. In some ways, they're a business, too, that compete with other businesses in town. And I'm just wondering if we would want them to have another public asset and be able to get it very inexpensively, with the potential that they would be competing with other businesses in town. So I'm not sure if I would want to change it. I think public use would be appropriate. Club membership, probably not. So, but I just was wondering what we were including.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if couldn't possibly be dragging them to places they don't want to be either. Inserting this public use here, I can't imagine specifically what they'd be. But Senator DeCray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I see what you're saying, Senator Roebling, and I guess I'm looking to the committee maybe for some ideas because what our intended purpose was for things like a memorial or a park, but if now's the time to amend this somewhat, I guess I'm not opposed to that, but I'm looking for some input if you guys have some ideas,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Well, at this point, I think public use would address your issue. I just wanted, I would think it would be a memorial or a park that anyone can walk into without checking in. But if it also would include the clubs and having to check in, I'm just trying to clarify. I wouldn't think that's necessarily a public use, but I just wanted to clarify that.
Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just, Ms. Stengel, is there sort of a statutory definition of public use? I think this is a point we should discuss before it would move out of this committee.
I don't know, Mr. Chair, Senator Reinert, I don't know of a definition off the top of my head. I can do a little bit of looking right now. But to Senator Roebling's question, I don't know that it is clear whether those clubs are private or public. I don't know that that's entirely clear.
Senator DeCray, did you have Senator McGuire, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a suggestion on this. I appreciate the questions, though, because I had one similar on that, but I have another question. So while we're doing research on this, can I
certainly
add mine? I could add something else to the or just a clarifying question, I think, is what it is. So the bill started out, Senator DeCray, as basically for Montgomery, and now you've just expanded it to be statewide. And so are there, I guess, or any of the local government organizations, does anyone see any issue with that? I don't know if you're probably going to ask for other testimony. I just wondered if anyone else saw any issues with any of this, if we were going to hear from anybody, or have you heard from anybody that thinks this is, that needs to be tweaked at all or changed?
Senator DeCray.
Mr. Chair and Senator McGuire, I've not heard from other organizations, but what my motivation was not just to help a city, in my district, but to try to take care of a glitch that might help a lot of other service organizations.
And Mr. Chair.
Senator McGuire.
And I appreciate that. So that's why I like the idea of it. I just don't know much about it, so I just was curious if anyone else, if you haven't heard from anybody, I'm hoping that it all seems like it should go according to plan. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion, Senator Keeler.
Mr. Chair, Mayor, one of my questions for you would be, it seems like with the current law and setup that Montgomery was able to solve their problem without having this language. And I'm not sure if that slowing down the process was a bad thing necessarily to happen, but does this really fix, or did the old language really limit what you're able to do, or is it just more convenient and makes it faster for the city council to do? So,
situation, right?
Or Senator Greif, if you want to answer, that's fine too.
Mr. Chair and Senator, actually, the city, the way the agreement is now, the city still owns the land. If we would have been able to gift it or transfer it, then it would be owned by the American Legion, and therefore, I believe, subject to property taxes, and they would be responsible for all the maintenance and that kind of thing. This way, we had to come to a, which is not a bad thing, a partnership agreement to make things work so they could move forward, because we were under a time crunch, actually, in the city with the school construction and needing to actually move it by a certain date. One of the other things when I think about this is our American Legion does not have a members only, and we don't have a separate VFW club, so it's shared by both. It's open to the public, so there, some though do require, I know in the state they do require your card to get in, ours does not. One of the other things is we have like limited parking. There's currently a building available that the city owns right across the street from our American Legion Club. It may serve as a parking lot at some point, possibly. With their limited funding, it would be a big benefit to the community when they have dances and weddings and that kind of thing, to be able to, increase their parking. So we're looking at this as, being able to maybe work a little better and improve the community in the future with other projects.
Okay. So, Senator Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm watching Ms. Stengel, and I don't see a... I don't see an aha. I found it.
Stengel.
Mr. Chair, Senator Reinhart, I'm seeing lots of instances of the use of the phrase public use, but I can't quite seem to find a definition. There might be one buried in there somewhere, but I have not come across it yet.
Well, Mr. Chair, Ms. Stengel, perhaps you can, if you find something, you can email it out to the committee at a later time. Mr. Chair, if I can just make a concluding comment. Senator Kielash raises a good point. You did find another alternative. I would argue, though, that increasingly, we're putting a lot of pressure on local government in terms of a variety of services. And so, whatever the state can do to give local government more flexibility to try and do that, I think, in Duluth, we've done some partnering with our local YW and YMCAs to do parks and rec activities because we've had to severely cut those back. And, if this is something that local governments can do to be a bit more flexible, that was, Senator, where my original question came from about, I understand we need to be cautious about widening the scope too much, and you've got a good way of describing what organizations would be eligible, but I like where you're going. I feel like we could maybe do a little bit better by our local units, and as we say to them, go partner, find other creative opportunities to provide the services people are looking for without us giving you the money to do it. So just maybe a thought as you proceed.
Senator DeCryf, has the VFW or American Legion or anyone statewide organizations? Have they weighed in on this at all, or have they seen it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this point, no. They really haven't weighed in on this. I've had a couple of conversations with folks, and they, when they don't have an immediate need, a lot of times they aren't that interested in it. But all of a sudden, they turn into this can turn into a situation where they have a need, and then it's important.
Senator DeCrave, I'm just concerned that we're not adding some kind of making some kind of change to their status with when we use for public use here. And you mentioned that your Legion or VFW club doesn't have to sign in our area. They do it. I'm just want to make sure that we don't have unintended consequences and that we're not impacting how they operate at all somehow and not unwittingly know it. Senator Kalish.
Mr. Chair, just curious as to where this will go from here. Will this need to go to Veterans Affairs? Or?
It goes to the floor. Maybe it should go to Veterans Affairs.
I mean, just to, review the status, but just to double check whether or not the organizations that are intended to qualify for this are actually in the definition. And that would give time for the public use also to definition to come forward.
That's a good idea, Senator Kalish. Maybe we can do that. Would you have any objection if we changed where this went to the Veterans Affairs?
Mr. Chair, no, I wouldn't. I would welcome that. It would give us an opportunity to speak with the veterans organizations more. So, no, that would be fine.
Okay. Senator Roebling.
Mr. Chair, I'll be happy to move the bill as amended. I think, after all, and Senator Reinhart is right in saying that we are giving more local control. And in a lot of ways, I can't imagine a city council doing this if the public isn't going to support it. And so, if the circumstances are right in a small community where they have no other businesses that would be in competition and they want to do something to try and keep help a business survive, a VFW or a Legion, maybe we should give them that discretion, but I don't mind it stopping somewhere else to have a little more discussion, because this was a delete all amendment pretty much, and I want to make sure that the organizations realize this is going statewide and isn't just for Montgomery, and so it probably is a good idea to make another stop, but I would move the bill as amended.
Senator Roebling moves the Senate file 1544 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to State Government Operations and Veterans Affairs. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
I kind of wonder about its commercial charity services. It could go much broader.
Next bill on today's agenda is Senate File 1190. This bill did pass out of committee last year, but was returned under Rule 47. Senator Chamberlain, is there an A3 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, there is an A3 amendment.
Okay. Senator Chamberlain moves the A3 amendment. Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the A3 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The amendment's adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a little refresher. As the Chair mentioned, this was passed out of committee last year and sent back here under Rule 47. So a brief refresher, then I'll turn it over to Mr. Griffith. He'll explain the amendment more clearly. But in general, this bill is about property rights, about jobs, and about reasonable regulation and licensure of these vacation homes, these vacation rentals. Vacation rentals are essentially private homes, single-family homes, condominiums, apartments that the owners choose to rent out for at particular times of the year for different reasons. And this type of business has been growing. In 2010, growing and flourishing provides essential jobs and to the community. It also allows the homeowners, the cabin owners, to keep their property in many cases if they run into hard times. Allows them to rent out the property and get some income and then keep the house and make the payments. But so this has been going on for years. Good for the economy, good for jobs. But about 2 years ago, the Department of Human Services sent out a letter to about 600 homeowners, and they addressed the issue, stating that these vacation home rentals were now going to come under the rule and authority of the Department of Human Services, Department of Health, excuse me. And they were going to treat them the same as Holiday Inns or resorts or any other sorts of lodging. So, again, we're talking about single-family homes, apartments or condominiums that people were renting out their own property, private property, for to vacationers. And the Department of Health decided to come in and try to regulate this private property the same as you would hotels, motels, and lodging. And so in their opinion, that was an overreach. They do not mind submitting to some form of regulation and licensure at the local level, but they had the Department of Health come in and regulate them as any other lodging or hotel, motel type of operation would be a little bit over the top. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Griffith, and he can explain the A3 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Bill Griffith. I represent the Minnesota Vacation Rental Association. Again, thank you for your time this afternoon. I'm going to just touch on the changes in the bill, just to be brief and to the point. We worked during the interim with the representatives of the local governmental associations, and a number of the changes were driven by those discussions. The first change in the Delete All Amendment is the definition of vacation rentals. It clarifies what it is, and importantly, it clarifies what it is not. It is not a hotel, motel, inn, or similar establishment. And so that creates some clarification as to the regulation of the use. The second thing that is in the Delete All Amendment is a clear statement of local governmental authority. You may recall from last year that essentially the bill called for preemption of the ability of local units to regulate or prohibit vacation rentals. So the change in subdivision 3D small b clarifies that that is a subject matter for local units of government. They can regulate, and specifically, while it calls out that they cannot require an interim use permit, a conditional use permit would certainly be something that local governmental units could use to regulate and permit vacation rentals. So we think that is a fairly significant change. Again, we have language that if they prefer, they can license under their licensing program vacation rentals. If they don't want to go through the process of holding a public hearing for a conditional use permit, they can simply license them. And then finally, following in small c, you'll see the numbered paragraphs or numbered lines that indicate the public safety concerns that were raised in testimony. Those are now called out as legitimate subject matter of local regulation. And so really our intent was to hear those concerns and attempt to address them in a reasonable and modest way. The regulation is provided both in the enabling law for counties and also the enabling law for zoning at the local level through cities and townships.
Mr. Griffith, when you say that the local government may license these properties, is there any restriction on how much they charge to do that? Or?
No, there is not.
I've heard of stories about those kind of charges getting out of hand from time to time. Is that something you don't think is necessary to worry about at this juncture? Or?
Mr. Chairman, members, we did not include that. We did not. We have not experienced that concern as vacation rental owners. There are, as you may know, a number of ordinances throughout the state. I believe Minneapolis may have one, or at least they worked on one. Lake County, Stearns County, and so far to date, we have not experienced significant concerns with the rate or cost of those licenses.
Thank you. Further discussion, Senator Kalish.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Griffith, is there a definition of vacation rentals? You've kind of got a vacation rental includes all things that you can rent any place else, and for example, the city of Minneapolis, you can rent a house or an apartment or whatever, and One of my concerns is that we're creating a loophole for slumlords to avoid local code violations, et cetera, by calling their property a vacation rental instead of residence. And, you know, one of the things in the prepared paper says it doesn't matter if it's 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, or 2 years of rental. That's a huge difference between somebody that's renting for a couple of weeks of vacation. And so I'm concerned that this is going to undermine the city's ability to regulate housing in their jurisdictions to make sure it complies with their local codes and that the owners of these properties are maintaining them up to the codes and standards that the city or county imposes on them.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, that is not the intent. In fact, the definition says on a short-term basis. Typically, a long-term rental is for a year or more under a lease. And the reason we added short-term basis, that was in response to the comments of the local units. We wanted to clearly distinguish this vacation rental, which is usually not your primary residence, and that's significant, from a long-term rental. The other thing that we provide is that it can be licensed. And in the city of Minneapolis, where we've had discussion on this subject matter, our members have actually obtained a rental license from the city of Minneapolis. So that would make them subject to all of the same regulations as long-term rental. And so we do not feel that this bill creates a loophole or an opportunity for our members not to be regulated in the same fashion as long-term rental. In fact, item C with the list of public safety issues and then a catch-all in item C7, any other provision necessary to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public would clearly allow local units of government to regulate them in a similar manner.
Senator Kalish.
Just to follow up, and is there a definition of short-term versus long-term basis? I don't know. I mean, that's just kind of...
Mr. Chairman and members, Senator Kalish, the reason we didn't put a number of days, that was a suggestion that we put a number of days, say 30 days, for instance. Some folks will rent these units from a couple of months to a half a year, and still it's not their primary residence. They don't occupy it like a long-term rental, and so there was a concern that if we picked a number of days, as surely as we did, there would be some of our members that would be on the other side of that number of days. So our understanding of short-term rental is different from long-term rental in that it's not month-to-month, it's not a year-long lease, and it's not certainly a primary residence. It's a secondary residence for vacation purposes. And we did, just if I might add, we did also research both the Internal Revenue Code and the definition that's used in other locations, other jurisdictions throughout the country to come up with this definition. But if there are tweaks that would help refine it and clarify your concerns, we're certainly open to those.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious about why numbers 4, 5, and 6 would be any different for somebody who's has a home or a cabin or anything else that they would rent than it would be for them if they just used it themselves. I mean, if they're going to have problems with waste and you're worried about the neighbors, it would be the same for anybody who was staying there, or the same with noise provisions or sewage treatment. I would expect that the same standards should apply no matter who's staying there. And so I'm wondering if we're implying that we would expect a higher standard for people who are renting than we would for people who are living there or staying at their cabin that they own. So I'm just wondering why those four. I can understand 1, 2, and 3. That makes sense. And 7, maybe. But 4, 5, and 6, I'm puzzling over.
Mr. Griffith.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, thank you. I tend to agree with you. Again, we were simply calling out things that testifiers testified to last year as a concern. We want to make it clear in our bill that it was not our intent to somehow get around those issues. But I would certainly agree with you that the existing nuisance laws on the books would address many of those concerns, and that's what we testified to last year. Certainly, number 7 kind of picks up everything in the list. And so it may be redundant, but we were just sensitive to the concerns that were testified to last session.
Mr. Griffith, wouldn't you rather have uniform standards applied to all the properties with similar uses? I mean, isn't that kind of the goal?
Mr. Chairman, members, yes, that is exactly what we would prefer. But again, in the art of compromise or an interest in compromise, we added these four or five items. If the, you know, if the committee prefers to simplify the language, we're certainly open to that.
Mr. It just seems to me that you're going to be called slumlords no matter which approach you take. But let's, Senator Sieben, you had a.
Mr. Chair, I was wondering if anyone from the Department of Health is here, if they had any comments on the legislation.
Someone is coming up. Could you state your name for the record, please?
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Colleen Paulus. I'm the manager of Environmental Health Services at the Department of Health.
Welcome to the committee. Could you restate your name? It was hard to hear.
Colleen Paulus.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Senator Sieben, did you have a question for
us? Well, Ms. Paulus, I was just wondering, since the Department of Health would no longer be or would not be regulating any of these vacation rental units, what if the agency had a position on the legislation or if you have concerns about things that may not be checked? Or I'm just wondering what your comments are on it in general.
Mr. Chair, Senator, it's unclear with the way the language is written on whether or not the Department of Health would not be able to license these establishments or the homes at this point. The Minnesota Department of Health has delegation agreements with counties and cities in about half of the state. So with this language, we have concerns because it appears that it might be undermining some of the agencies, the local agencies that are already currently, that currently have delegation agreements with the department, so that a county or a county, let's just say Hennepin County, has a delegation agreement. This seems to allow other cities and townships within the county to do duplicate work, which has already been delegated from the Minnesota Department of Health.
Further discussion? Senator McGuire.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if there's confusion, who would trump? Who is it, the city or the county, or if it's been delegated to one person? Maybe we ask counsel that if she knows in statute or if it's unclear to you. Can we make it clear? I'm guessing we need to clarify some of that. That's just one question. I have another question then, too, Mr. Chair. But just brought up that. Do you have a suggestion?
Mr. Chair, Senator McGuire, our suggestion would be to use the current infrastructure that is in place throughout the state for the health, safety, and welfare of these type of establishments. They're currently being licensed throughout the state, either by the Department of Health or by counties or cities with delegation agreements. So we already have rules in place, and so there is a point where someone could call if they had concerns about a facility. There's already a place where you can call, and we would be able to direct them either through the department or with a county or a city.
Mr. Chairman, yeah. Members, one of our concerns and one of the reasons for the bill, the genesis of the bill, is that there is overlapping jurisdiction throughout the state. In some cases, our members have been asked to obtain three different permits and licenses just to have short-term rentals. Sometimes they do it for a couple weekends a year, and yet they have to go through three different procedures, state and local, in order to do that.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering why the health department would need to be involved in this, why it would not be better to have the local communities better able to regulate this, especially since each community is different in what they might see as abuses. So why exactly would not the city councils be better able to handle this through their zoning, like short-term basis? They could even define short-term basis depending upon what particular abuses they might see coming.
Ms. Paulus.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, the local zoning, Minnesota Department of Health does not influence the local zoning. When we would approve a license, we do it together with the local zoning. We always check with local zoning on whether or not we can approve a license. And so there's basically two issues with this amendment, with this bill. There's the zoning, and then there's the licensing. The zoning, we could say, is something that's more on the outside of the building, and with the licensing, we talk about the lodging rules, and that goes on the inside of the structure. And so this bill kind of is a little bit too general in terms of whether or not you would be able to have standards that would be on the inside of the structure, such as safe water, clean linens, free of bed bugs, sewage wells. There's smoke detectors. So there's a host of concerns on the interior of a lodging facility that we currently look at through our rules.
Ms. Paulus, can you give us a little history? How did you get started? Do you actually license these facilities now?
Mr. Chair, Senators, yes, the department does currently license them. We have direct services in half of the state and delegated services in the other half of the state through the counties and the cities. So it's joint. It's if the state doesn't do it, then a county or a city licenses.
Ms. Paulus, what made you get into that? How did you decide to pursue that licensing?
Mr. Chair, Senators, this has been something that's been happening for decades, basically, in terms of how we've been licensing lodging facilities. The vacation home industry has blossomed or grown over the last decade with the use of the Internet, and that's why it's become a much basically a hotter issue at this time.
So any property owner that rented out their property on a short-term basis was always required to have a license? Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senators, yes, that is correct.
And is that in statute, Ms. Paulus, or where did we arrive at that from?
Mr. Chair, Senators, it's in statute 157.
Thank you. Mr. Griffith.
Mr. Chairman, members, one of the reasons this bill came forward is the owners were in a defensive posture because a bill was brought forward a couple of years ago to clarify what was unclear authority, that this use be treated as public lodging. And our members were very, very concerned with the direction of that clarification to include this as public lodging, because it simply isn't. It's a private home. It's done under a private contract. You can't walk up and knock on the door and say, geez, could I please have access to your home tonight to stay at? We don't have public facilities. We don't have public restaurants, tennis courts, pools. And so we felt it was very, very important that rather than always being in a position of on the defense with the Department of Health and others, that we in fact clarify how it's done in many other states. Our neighboring state of Wisconsin simply collects a sales tax from vacation rentals. They don't come into people's homes and start to inspect them. And yet we felt it was important, because we are concerned with public health, that we make it clear in our bill that the local authorities are the best authorities to make sure that the septic is working, that people don't overpark the yard, and so on. And all of those things could be done simply under the existing laws for nuisance, individual septic systems. But in clarifying the use and defining the use, we felt it was important to restate those types of authority here. But we want to make it clear for the committee and others who are listening that we think it is terribly inappropriate for the State Department of Health to regulate the private use of people's homes.
Okay, Ms. Paulus, one other question. How did you find the bright line between rental housing and vacation housing? What is it? Do you license rental housing currently, or?
Mr. Chair, Senators, rental housing is typically something that's over 30 days, and there is a difference. We do not regulate rental housing. That's a long-term agreement. There are other regulations in terms of rental housing. This issue in terms of the vacation home rentals has been around for the last, I think, 4 or 5 years. There was a report to the legislature. Explore Minnesota put that report together where we brought the interested parties together. We had hoped that the Vacation Home Renter Owners Association would be part of that in terms of coming to the table and compromising and working out some of the agreements. It's been difficult because they have not come to the table to talk with the whole group, with Explore Minnesota, as a result of that legislative report. We've all been wanting to come to a resolution and a working agreement so that no one agency is precluded, or that we can come up with a way so that we're creating something that, one, is a level playing field because we have bed and breakfasts that might be side by side with a vacation home rental. The bed and breakfast is regulated while the vacation home rental is not, or they refuse to get a license. We have had complaints from people who live next to vacation home rentals. One of their biggest complaints is that there is no one there to supervise what's going on when someone is staying at the home. And so there's basically occupants without any type of responsibility, and that is infringing and impacting the neighboring properties. So I think last time when you were hearing about some of the zoning or the number of occupants, the parking, the signage, and the waste removal, those were legitimate complaints. And I do receive those type of complaints where homeowners or cabin owners are very frustrated and they're looking for some type of a compromise or a way that there could be a focal point with throughout the state, so there would be the same expectation throughout the whole state and on how these properties are being occupied and used.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. I think to her last point, this would give uniform definition throughout the state to each municipality and county as to how these properties should be treated. Secondly, as far as confusion, I think the language, as Mr. Griffith has stated, makes it fairly clear that the primary authority for this will now fall under the local municipality or the county by giving them authority to issue the licensure and then also create these ordinances that would address the concerns, as we previously mentioned, to parking, signage, and all those issues that citizens in the community would be concerned about. So I think it's clear. I think we've addressed those other issues that Ms. Paulus has alluded to, and the local ordinances still apply in all cases.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now I'm a little confused. You said that it gives uniform, but if each county and municipality is setting up the restrictions and the limitations, that's not to me, that's not uniform. That's patchwork. Then every city and municipality. So, I mean, I understand that people want to rent out their place. We all know people who have lake homes. I have bed and breakfast in my district. They have to do all the rules. But, you know, we all think that, you know, it'd be nice to be able to rent your house. But if you were a neighbor of a house that was being rented, you really do want them to have there to be some rules about that. And I like that you've identified the number of occupants, the parking, and the different things that they should look at. Because I think once, as far as our tourism industry goes, we want people to be able to come to Minnesota and have some sort of sense that what they're going to rent is something that's clean and good and that can handle the septic, can handle the system that's advertised. I mean, I think you want there to be some expectation in Minnesota for our tourist industry that they're going to have a good place when they get there. But so if every county and city are doing their own rules, how is that uniform is what I'm curious.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator McGuire. Well, it is, you know, we believe in local control in the most part. We have to strike a balance between state control, local control. Local control here, as Senator Nelson mentioned earlier, is the best place to put these. Each community, each county has a different flavor, different desire, different needs and wants. And there's also a marketplace element in here. If a county or municipality wants to shut it down and exclude these jobs, exclude this type of business and force people to sell their cabins or go into foreclosure because they can't no longer afford to keep them, then that would be their choice. But some of these are run by organizations, as you've seen online, and they have a responsibility to their clients, the homeowners, and to the people renting those homes and to the city. So I think local control, keeping it close to the vest, it is uniform. Every city and county will know what to expect and that they're going to be in charge of setting these ordinances and establishing those how it goes. Again, it's a contract between private citizens for private property, and the marketplace will work pretty good for that.
So Senator Chamberlain, would noise ordinances apply in this case?
Yes. You know, this, as Mr. Griffith has alluded to, Senator Roebling as well, we discussed this at length last year, is that local ordinances are still there. So if you got the fear is you got 12 21-year-olds on their birthdays hanging out at a vacation home at somebody's private home in the neighborhood, and that's a legitimate concern. But there's still police and there's still ordinances that say, well, no, you cannot be doing X and Y in the middle of the night. There we have laws, we have rules, we have regulations and ordinances to apply to that. So the citizens will be protected. The intent is not to harm the local community. The intent is to give as much control and protection to the local community as we possibly could and still allow these people to function and rent out their private property as they see fit.
Senator Kielash?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. One, is there any requirement in statutes, Ms. Paulus, about notifying you or local jurisdictions that you're putting your cabin up for rent so that I think some of what the frustration for some of the neighbors are is that all of a sudden a place goes from being a cabin for a family to a rental unit, and I'm just wondering if there's any notification required in state statutes at this time for that?
Mr. Chair, Senator, so it's just the statute just says if you're going to have that type of business or engage in that type of activity, then you're required to have a license.
For the license.
For providing lodging to the public.
Senator Chamberlain.
And just quickly to that point, Senator Kielash, thank you. Line 1.15, the owner of such property to register the property with the county. So they could register the property to the county, and the county, again, or the municipality could certainly say send out a notification or require the vacation home owner to notify the surrounding homes and community.
Senator Seaver.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I missed at the beginning. Where is this bill going next, or is it going to another committee?
This bill goes to general order.
I'm curious about the tax implications for people who are renting out their vacation or their homes. Can they still qualify as for the homestead credit, for instance? And is there any – I'm not real familiar if there's any definition of the length of time where – they could not be occupying their home to whether they'd still qualify for the homestead credit.
Senator Sieben, the Department of Revenue is here and would like to testify on the bill. So
great.
Maybe if you'd like, we could have them see if they want to come up now. That's okay with you, Senator Chamberlain?
Mr. Chair, Senator Chamberlain, first of all, we wanted to thank Senator Chamberlain for, I guess we admire him for taking on this issue. We know it's a really big issue. And So there's...
State your name for the tape, please.
My name is Paul Cummings, and I'm with the Department of Revenue. First of all, we do recognize that this bill deals primarily with zoning. Sections of statute that don't primarily deal with taxation. And we also see from this version the delete all amendment from the original version that came through last year, that this is further defining what a vacation home rental is, but it is not defining it in terms of the tax statutes. So while we see this as further definition in another part of statute, we do see this as something that may draw further confusion as it relates to trying to define it for tax purposes. This is something that we're interested in primarily because we want to make sure we become attuned to issues in which equals are not being treated as equals within our tax system. And so we, when there was a report that was initiated 4 years ago, and then there was a report in January of 2009, the Department of Revenue did work for to suggest some model language in order to try and define what an occasional sale is for these purposes. And that language is not included here. But we're more than willing to continue to work with Senator Chamberlain and in order to make that distinction work.
Senator Stephen.
Thank you. So, Mr. Cummings, are these properties subject to lodging taxes, for instance, taxes that are imposed locally at the local level related to lodging taxes?
Mr. Cummings.
I think this begins to deal with some of the things that we're trying to define. And in terms of many of the local taxes, in terms of many of the statewide taxes, it does get to the issue of what is an isolated or occasional sale as defined in statute. So there would be applicability for many of the local sales taxes if it was beyond what an occasional or isolated sale is.
Mr. Griffith, did you have a comment?
Mr. Chairman, members, I want to make clear that many of our members, if not most of them, already pay taxes, whether local or state, and have no problem or concern with further clarification in that regard.
Thank you.
So,
Senator Stephen.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Cummings, could you clarify if someone has a homesteaded property, but yet they're renting it out, say it's a short-term basis, so I heard varying accounts of what that is, less than a year or less than 6 months, could they still classify their property as homestead?
For the purposes of homesteading, we don't see this as something that would change how the law is currently applied as it relates to homestead. If it was a homestead before, it would be a homestead after.
Eaton and then McGuire. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My concern as a community nurse is the health implications that were addressed by the health department. I have enough trouble with clients who move frequently and the spread of bed bugs. We're talking about a lot of different things like hepatitis and if things aren't cleaned properly with clean linens. And my concern about this whole thing is if you have a place that's turning over with new people, say, every week, you know, you have the potential of a lot of hazard, public health hazard.
Mr. Griffin.
Mr. Chairman, members, again, the local licensing gives the ability for the local units of government to take on that responsibility. And I will tell you that throughout our membership, that has not been an issue. The types of concerns you have raised, the issues that have been raised are the ones that are addressed in the bill regarding parking, noise, and so forth. Our members have not had the types of experiences you've described. I certainly appreciate your concern, but if it hasn't been a problem, are we trying to legislate something before it is a problem?
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to get a handle on this. Okay, so I have a bed and breakfast in my district, and they've been following all the rules as licensed by bed and breakfast, but it appears as though if something like this passes, they could maybe not be a bed and breakfast anymore. They could just offer their home for, rental, and then not have to do the kinds of things that they've been asked to do to make sure that they're clean and safe and all of those things, and it, you know, at some cost, which I quite frankly support to some degree that we have safe places for people to be. But what would distinguish them, you know, from not getting licenses as a bed and breakfast, but then just becoming a vacation rental home where they would then be by the city? And then while you're answering that, okay, if you have a small city, like one of my cities is very small, Falcon Heights, I don't know that we don't have a Department of Health in Falcon Heights. Who manages, who oversees it then in a small city like that? And those are two questions.
Sure. Mr. Griffith. Yes, Mr. Chairman, members, Senator, thank you for that question. First of all, the bed and breakfast is regulated as a bed and breakfast, and the primary distinction is that you are usually, not always, but usually renting a room rather than the entire house, so you don't occupy the entire house and don't have control of the entire premises. The other significant distinction is that someone's making a meal for you, and so when people are making meals for third parties, it is the proper jurisdiction of the public health authorities within the home. Those are the two main distinctions, and it doesn't change the definition of bed and breakfast. If someone decides that they would rather be regulated as a vacation rental, then essentially they would be turning over their entire home, because that's how most people understand a vacation rental. And if you go out onto the internet, that's how they're held out to folks who want to rent the entire premises. And the second question was with regard to local units that don't have licensing operations. I don't see this, you know, we can ask council, but I don't see this as precluding a delegation where a local unit of government says, we can't do this, we don't want to do this, but we will delegate that authority, which is provided in this bill, to some other unit. I know in several cities they share that licensing responsibility, and so you could delegate to another local unit, or you could, I suppose, delegate to the Department of Health. But it wouldn't be the state on its own motion coming into people's homes. It would be essentially through a delegation or invitation of a local unit of government.
And then, Mr. Chair, follow up on that. And then would that be a cost to the local unit of government for that delegation of that duty? So this is going to cost my local unit of government?
Mr. Chairman, members, with any licensing, you have already existing authority to recoup the cost of that program through fees. And so you would have to establish fees that cover the cost of running the program. But basically every licensing program throughout the state has the ability to recover their costs through fees on the user, the licensee. So the licensee pays essentially for the program that regulates.
So if I have one licensee, they're going to pay for the entire program in Falcon Heights?
Well, if you have... Mr. Chairman, members, again, okay, if you have one licensee and there's an annual inspection or something, that's not a significant cost. Yes, that licensee would pay for that annual inspection.
The entire thing.
That's how it works with everything from liquor licenses to dance floor operations. Mm-hmm. The licensee pays the cost of the program.
Ms. Paulus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senators, in regards to the question for licensing, and if we could use the Falcon Heights example, the city of Falcon Heights does not have a program. It would be the Ramsey County that has the delegation agreement to have a lodging program. And with this bill, what it would do is undercut Ramsey County's ability to license in Falcon Heights. So you would actually have almost a duplication of effort and some confusion in terms of who would be responsible for the lodging inspection.
Senator Roebling.
Chair. I'm puzzling about why you believe that the county or the cities couldn't still contract with you. If that's how they decided to set up their ordinance so that there would be oversight and they would use a contracted agency, why would that? I guess I'm not reading how that would be prohibited. I think this is mostly saying that the counties can't say you can't have short-term rental properties. And if you do, you can pass an ordinance that would address all of these issues. And in addressing those issues, you could perhaps, I don't see what's in here that would prevent them from working with another agency to address those issues. I guess I don't see the prohibition that you're speaking about.
Ms. Paula.
Mr. Chair, Senators, again, this bill kind of confuses two issues. One is zoning, one is licensing. And the zoning issue is separate. That is local control. In terms of the licensing, the current licensing infrastructure that is in place throughout the state right now is with the Commissioner of Health and through delegation agreements. And when it starts to overlap with this bill, what it does, it causes more confusion. It overlaps with the current infrastructure and the current authority that is in statute when it comes to licensing for public health and safety.
Well, Senator Chamberlain, do you believe you confuse the situation here?
Mr. Chair, did you say did we confuse the situation? Just to close, Mr. Chair, I'd like to say that, again, I think that does provide clarity. I trust local control. In this case, they have the citizens' best interest in mind. If we do not do something, we allow the Department of Health to have complete mandate and control over all these vacation homes. We're talking about, you know, conservatively 1,000, but there's no telling how many are out there that we could impact negatively and shut down and force people to no longer own their home, own those cabins, but sell those cabins or have them foreclosed. So this bill strikes a balance between, again, private property, jobs, economy, and the local residents and community, their desire to have control over the regulatory and licensure process of activity within their county. And also, as he's become my new friend, Mr. Cummings, we could certainly draft another bill to address the definition of the vacation rental. That's not a problem. So it's it moves it forward. It does clarify it, puts in the right spot, and puts some definitions around this thing, and gives the locals some authority to maintain their community in the county.
Mr. Cummings, did you have a comment? And I know I see Mr. Olson's here, and Senator, you have a question.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify to Senator Sieben that there is a threshold in which vacation home rentals does turn into some sort of a business. I mean, and that threshold is out there, and I'm not trying to say that it isn't. So there is a point at which homestead would go away, but this isn't being addressed in this bill. So my intention was not to say that there isn't a threshold ever in which something does become a business or a bed and breakfast or of some kind. But that's not the intention was to say that it wasn't part of this.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Sieben.
I think that just speaks to how this bill needs more work because, for instance, looking on Craigslist, I just found a website that has Scott and Jenna short stay, your relaxing space. Do you need a furnished private space to call your own in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and on? We can help you by the day, week, month, or et cetera, stay in private homes. So, I mean, there is some degree to which I think that the Internet is helping things move more quickly, perhaps, than our statutes are keeping up with, and this is certainly a case where there perhaps needs to be some clarification, but the legislation is still so vague in terms of what's a short-term basis. Does it mean you can rent out your home for, I think this came up last year, can you rent out your home for 10 months out of the year? Can you rent out your home for the entire year, save 1 week when you're still there, and then avoid paying taxes on it being classified as a hotel or motel? Or it just seems to me that this is a pretty slippery slope that I appreciate that you have more clarification in this bill, Senator Chamberlain, but I'm not sure in terms of some of the definitions that you're quite there yet. That's why I asked why this bill isn't going either to Commerce, because I think, as Ms. Paulos alluded to, it does have implications on how Minnesota markets itself in terms of tourism dollars that come into the state. And other implications in terms of our tax code, and not just because we want to try to collect taxes on, as you clarify or as you characterize, as a private-to-private interaction, but we don't want this to become a loophole for people who aren't don't have the best intentions from trying to get around paying taxes.
God forbid that market should move ahead without the Department of Revenue and the Department of Commerce providing services for people. Senator Olson. I mean, Mr. Olson.
Sorry. Mr. Chairman, I think Joel Carlson. I think Senator Chamberlain had a comment, and then I'm happy to
just go. Just quickly, Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Carlson, is that, as Mr. Griffith reminded me, this is a zoning issue. This is a zoning issue, and I can make an appointment with Mr. Cummings next week, and we'll draft a definition for vacation rentals and get that sewn up, because the folks want to pay their taxes and make sure they're doing their share for the state. Thank you.
Mr. Carlson, sorry.
thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of the Congress of Minnesota Resorts, and I think other lodging establishments would have similar concerns that I'd like to at least present to the committee. I just want you to know that we're absolutely supportive of vacation rental homes as an activity. We don't oppose them, but we do want to see their appropriate use, and we have opposed legislation that authorizes vacation rental homes as a matter of property right without the ability of local units of government to control their use. And that, our concern is that is what we believe this legislation does. This does not, in our estimation, deal with appropriate zoning, permitting, public health and safety issues, or community involvement as it relates to having these vacation rental homes next to other residential purposes. And that's where the conflict comes, and that's where these properties bump up against each other. You know, the legislature did authorize a study of this issue, and I participated as a member of the Vacation Rental Home Task Force, and we looked at all of these issues, and I can tell you, I spent more time on vacation rental homes than I've spent in vacation rental homes, and it has proven to be a very nettlesome issue because you have such conflicting uses, because these are generally commercial uses, and they are used on a nightly and weekly basis with different guests every week. And I assure you, when they're next to you, you want to make certain that the government has some ability, or someone has some ability, to control that use. And that is that has been the genuine problem that we have faced with this issue. I would say that the DE amendment is inconsistent with the recommendations of the Vacation Rental Task Force as it relates to consistent land use, local zoning, a level playing field on taxation and permits and inspection and fire and safety codes, and the proper taxation issue that Mr. Cummins mentioned. As to the bill itself, members, I would just say that the definition that is before you lacks clarity and is overly broad. If you look at this, and I'm not even making an illogical leap, because you have allowed now manufactured home, mobile homes, or other similar property rented on a short-term basis. If I own a lot on a lake and I put a camper on that property, I have the ability to rent that out as a vacation rental home. And the reason I say that is if you look at lines 1.11, you will see that a county, and the language is similar for a municipality, they must not enact or enforce an ordinance that precludes this use. You cannot have an ordinance that precludes it. It then goes on and says that you may voluntarily license these establishments, and that is not mandatory. Simply because you have the use, it does not say that you must have a license. It says you may license. And I think the issue that the Department of Health was trying to get the committee to focus on is that on 1.14, it says the county may license, or down below, the municipality may license. Right now, the regulation for lodging establishments are done by the Department of Health. they give us as resorters or as other people in the lodging industry, the square footage of your bedrooms, how many fire detectors you have to have, what kind of kitchen facilities you have to have. That is all governed by a state law and rules that implement that law. This now says that the counties or the municipality would have to duplicate that as it relates to health and safety provisions, and it does create a confusion between the existing laws it relates from generated by the Department of Health and now whether or not a county or a municipality can write their own rules. Right now, you have two-person room, you got to have 120 square feet.
Well,
if I'm a city, let's say I only want 80, or I don't need any restriction. I can have it in a closet if that's a bedroom, if I want to qualify that as a bedroom. There is an inconsistency in how it's drafted. I don't think that is intentional, but I believe that there is an inconsistency here that I don't think you can resolve with the language that's in front of you. So we have concerns about that. I've met with Senator Chamberlain, and I know he's very earnestly wanting people to be able to use their property, and so do we. But we want to have it used in an appropriate way with appropriate controls so that you don't have the party house next to you, that you don't have any local ability to control. And Senator Roebling, I listened to your question about, house is a house, and why would it be different for sewage or garbage? I can tell you that the number of sewage treatment system failures, when you have 10, 15, 20 guests at a two-bedroom house and that system is not appropriately sized for that type of use and consistent use week after week, it absolutely makes a difference. And I've seen septic system failures around our lakes, and I've seen them on my own lake. And it is a genuine problem. So they absolutely have to have the ability to have some health and safety regulations, and right now that flows from the state, the MPCA on the sewage treatment, the health department on the facility itself, and local units of government have the ability to say no, this is not an appropriate use in this residential area. So those are our concerns, Mr. Chairman. I'm happy to answer questions, but it has been a difficult issue, and just flatly saying that you cannot prohibit that use, we think just goes too far.
Well, Mr. Carlson, I'm confused here about your travel trailer analysis. Are you saying you could put a trailer on a lake lot? You probably could, but it says that a county may adopt by ordinance the following restrictions and limitations on vacation rental housing: number of occupants, parking, waste removal, noise provisions, sewer treatment, and any other provision necessary to protect the health, safety, and welfare. It seems pretty clear to me that this does address those issues.
Mr. Chairman and members, you have to know that I'm only aware of a couple of counties in the state that actually have adopted ordinances as it relates to vacation rental homes. And so you have to make the assumption, number one, that all counties are now going to promulgate a regulation for vacation rental homes. And I suggest that it's just as controversial at the local level as it has been here. But if I want to put a trailer on a lake lot as a private person and use it, there is a prohibition against that. In my county, in Becker County, there is. I can't do that. If I put that on there and now say it's a vacation rental home, and you don't have any regulation that precludes it or license it, I don't see any way where this language is going to give me as a neighboring property owner any ability to have any impact on that property next to me to continue to operate. You can't resolve that. I couldn't do it and live there myself, because I know there's a regulation against that, but I could do it and rent it out on a weekly basis under this language.
Senator Eaton.
Well, I just wanted a clarification, Mr. Chair, that, and I think it's been answered, but my understanding of this bill, it would take the licensing from the state and give it to the local government. Is that correct? Okay.
Senator Roebling.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that Mr. Carlson is really addressing the original bill and that most of his concerns are being addressed in the amendment. And I think that you know, if most counties don't currently have ordinances or most cities currently don't have ordinances, that their associations will develop model ordinances to promulgate and share with them for adoption. You know, I'm sure that there will be assistance with that. I we can overregulate anything and thereby exclude its possible use. But, you know, this is a time where, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, like, if somebody had a cabin that they used 3 months of the year and they knew a family who just lost their home in foreclosure and they're looking for an inexpensive place to rent, why would we prevent somebody from doing that and making it so ridiculously impossible that they couldn't do it for a short period of time to help out a family? Or, you know, somebody mentioned in one of these pieces, like, a professor who might be going somewhere to do research and they need a place to stay, and it may be out in the wilderness where there aren't a lot of other rental options, but somebody has a cabin out there. Why do we have to make it so restrictive that they couldn't rent that cabin for several months while they did research in northern Minnesota? I mean, there's just, we can overregulate everything, and I do believe that looking at the areas that we are saying the counties and cities can restrict under this provision, they can handle pretty much any problem that's going to come up, because it covers any other provision necessary to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public. And so it's pretty inclusive in my view.
Mayor Kalish, then Limmer.
Senator Roebling, just to the comments, one of the things I think this does is it creates a new classification of rental units, and I think that's the issue in some ways. It's like, you know, if it's so-called short-term basis, it's got one set of rules, and if that same professor came and rented an apartment in Ely, for example, he'd be under another set of rules, and defining which set of rules that particular same piece of property would be under is part of the problem with this. Mr. Carlson, my question to you is that, and I think it was reported in last year's committee, or somebody else brought it up, and that is that you're representing an organization that's in competition with these. And I know that one of the things that's been going on is the number of brokers and or homeowners that have multiple properties that are renting them out on an annual basis or on a week-to-week basis, and are doing it, and they're avoiding the zoning and they're avoiding all these other things, and those are in direct competition to your members, I believe. Could you just expand on on what's going on in the industry and the concerns of your members about unfair competition in this?
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Kalish and members, the level playing field that I mentioned was clearly an issue that we had tried to address at the Vacation Rental Home Task Force. And there are significant costs that lodging properties, not just resorts, but bed and breakfasts and others, all incur to make certain that they have a safe place for public accommodations. And, you know, we are annually inspected. We pay license fees. We have to get our septic system tested and upgraded. We have to have licensed plumbers come in and drain our pipes. All of those expenses that existing establishments must incur to obtain a license are not applied to vacation rental homes. And while that level playing field is an issue for us, I wanted to be clear that we don't oppose the appropriate use of vacation rental homes. That's just goes with that it should come with the same requirements that all other lodging facilities go through. And it is an issue. We have agents. There was one that testified here last year, I think, who said he manages 30 or 40 properties. You know, these are businesses. These are not somebody going away for 2 weeks to try and rent their lake home and putting the postcard up at the local store, you know, going to be gone and, you know, cabin for rent. That's not what we're talking about. We are talking about the very substantial proliferation of vacation rental homes as commercial businesses. businesses. Those are what our main focus was. And I don't think anyone on that task force had any issue with people that are going to rent out their lake home for a week or two. That was not at all a focus. These are people that are operating commercial businesses in residential areas that under this, we believe, would not be subject to local zoning and regulation.
Mr. Griffith.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members. Again, the reason for the bill is for clarity. And one of the great concerns that we had as an association is that as soon as you define this as public lodging, as the Department of Health attempted to do two separate sessions, you put this in a category then that it wouldn't be allowed in 80 to 90% of the districts in which you have residences. Why? Because public lodging is usually found in commercial districts. So think about it. If your home, your vacation home, your cabin is in a single-family residential district on a lake and you're defined as public lodging, you're no longer legal. And that was the concern in terms of unfair competition and the direction of that bill. And so by defining this as vacation rental, we finally give it a definition in statute. We make it clear that the local units have the control and the licensing ability. And in terms of the public hearing, if you ask for a conditional use permit, if you require a conditional use permit, then you go through a public hearing process. But again, the local unit of government gets to decide whether that's necessary or appropriate. So all of the concerns have been addressed. We did this over a couple of years. But let me be clear that if the state prevails, the Department of Health prevails in defining this as public lodging, it will not be allowed in 80 to 90% of the locations that are now rented in the state as vacation rentals.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir. Mr. Carlson.
I think Mr. Griffin just hit on the key question here, which is they're not allowed in residential areas. Why is that? Because their uses are not consistent. And there is a way that we can allow for the appropriate use of vacation rental homes, and I think that's what this task force came to. But it involves the local unit of government, it involves the community, and you should be able to have and the ability to not have one. You absolutely should be able to have one that a location that does not work for this type of use. This legislation, as we read it, does not allow for that. It cannot be precluded, and that is our concern. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Carlson, I share your sympathy with the level playing field argument because of all the rules and regulations that the other classification has to go through. But these simply are not multiple unit types of properties. That's the problem. The use isn't the same as a very high density resort. So they are different. They don't sell. They're not selling food. They don't have restaurants and bars in them and all those kinds of things too. So they are substantially different as far as their use. Senator Limmer, did you have a comment?
I'm not sure if I can really add to this, but Mr. Carlson, I hope you're not advocating some type of fencing attitude to keep private homeowners from enjoying a full use of their property. Whether we like to know it or not, this is going on right now. A lot of people, especially baby boomers that are beginning to age, and they don't spend every weekend up at the lake. They have houses that are sitting vacant for a great amount of time of the summer, and they could actually garner maybe just enough to pay their taxes on it and keep it in the family so they can pass it on to the next generation. And as for the fear of it becoming a party house, don't we have law enforcement that if someone disturbed the peace that law enforcement could come and just like they do in my neighborhood, and close it down a little bit, keep a little bit of a low rumble to it all. And so I'm just thinking that we certainly have heard a lot of fear of whether or not a private home can be rented out once in a while, and maybe on a consistent basis. But I think there's people, especially in today's real estate market, they're very close to losing some of their property, and then they're going to be forced to sell it at a bargain discount rate in reflection of the market condition. This would extend the life of ownership. It would give people a little opportunity to maybe make enough. They're not going to get rich on renting out a home necessarily for the 3 months of vacation quality time. And so I just kind of look at it and think this is a means to allow families to keep maybe a second home or maybe their own primary home. They can make full use of it. gain a little income, and maybe not fall into that category of a full commercial operation. I'm trying to determine what is the problem with all of that, even if it was a business, I'm even questioning that, because if it was a business, wouldn't all these properties be taxed at a higher rate, a non-homestead rate anyway? And so I think there's plenty of penalty or excessive costs or a business cost application to it.
And Senator Lummer, we don't disagree on the concept of your right to the use of your property. But when your use infringes on your neighbor's use and is inconsistent with the surrounding zoning, that's what has generated this issue and this problem. And we are certainly sympathetic to, both to the economic hardship and the needs of people that want to be able to appropriately rent out their property. Saying that as a matter of right, you can't preclude me from doing that no matter what I do, just takes us one step too far. That's our concern. And, it isn't that we want to preclude that use. We want to see the appropriate use with appropriate controls like there are on other commercial uses in residential area. And it is a commercial use. And believe me, calling the police, and Senator Harrington can tell you, that's not a fun experience. Who wants to do that at your week at the lake? Call the cops and have them out there and the sheriff come out. It's not a good experience. So I really think that we need to figure out a way for these properties to be locally zoned and utilized without having to call out the sheriff to keep law and order. I just think that's a bad situation for everyone. And that has happened, and the Department of Health can give you examples of it, and it's a problem. I know there are a bunch of them on Mille Lacs Lake that have been a real problem.
Fascinating discussion, but I think we should vote on this pretty soon. Senator Lummer, did you have a follow-up?
Well, Mr. Carlson, I find it to be rather presumptive of you to assume that anybody who rents out their own property is going to damage the property rights of their neighbor simply because of a temporary tenant. I find that to be rather insulting in a way that's going to happen and that it's presumed that that will happen. But to think that I just think that we've got a whole bushel of red herrings here, and I don't think it's the great problem that everybody thinks it is. And maybe it's a little bit of property envy that you might be raising between different property owners, but it might just be as instead of renting at grandma's house, give her a little extra income to pay the taxes. Someone wants to deny that particular owner an opportunity to make a little money during a vacant time in that property during the year, so they can go down the shoreline and rent the real property, the real rental property, not the amateur one down the road. And I think I just think that this is nothing more than a fencing issue that's being raised here, and it's not allowing an owner to enjoy the full rights of their own property.
Hey, Senator McGuire, then I have Kailash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, then you've probably never been next to a house that has been commercially run, and there are examples. We've heard lots of them. But I think what's the problem with this bill is that it's put in law that they can't, the local government unit of government can't regulate that when they see that. None of us have any trouble with a person renting out their house. And I just think that they can work on this so that they can define that better, and we can allow for what we want, but not be so broad-based. The issue with this bill is that it's too broad-based. None of us have a problem with a person being able to rent out their house when they want to, but they can't be. It can't have the uses that we've seen as problematic. So I don't think this bill clarifies enough, and so I think it should at least go to another committee, Mr. Chair, so that they can continue to work on this. So I would move that we send it to Commerce. This is totally going to affect the tourist industry. So can I move that it goes to either Commerce or Taxes? I mean, I'd like to see it go to another committee before it goes to the floor, for sure.
You can move one or the other.
Which one? Commerce.
Commerce.
I'll move that it goes to
McGuire
Commerce.
Moves it.
Needs some more. Needs a little more work.
We do have a couple more testifiers. Do you want to keep that motion or?
Oh, yeah,
we can leave it on the table.
Mr. Chair.
Temporarily. Senator McGuire temporarily withdraws her motion. Senator Mr. McRoy, did you want to?
I just have a hand up, Mr. Chair.
While he's coming around, Senator Chamberlain.
Mr. Chair, they still have a hearing in the House, and if there's something else we can do over there, that is fine. But I certainly would not support it going to Commerce. It does not need to go through that committee.
Hey, Mr. McRoy.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Dan McElroy. I'm Executive Vice President of the Minnesota Resort and Campground Association and Executive Vice President of the Minnesota Lodging Association. And Mr. Carlson's organization has interests almost identical to ours, so I won't repeat the things that Joel provided to you. Joel's a lawyer and I think dealt with many of the legal issues. I'm a former small-town city council member and small-town mayor, and so the regulation of home occupations is not new. Some of them are regulated both as to use at the city level and as to the technical regulation at the state level in cosmetology businesses, beauty parlors, and haircutting establishments are the most common of those. I think we've established that they need some regulation. I agree with Mr. Carlson and Senator Chamberlain that homeowners should be able to rent their properties. This isn't as simple an issue, however, as it's been portrayed. Those of you who have your laptops out, I would invite you to go to www.bedbugregistry.com. You'll find that there were more than 500 incidents of bedbugs reported on that site in Minnesota alone, many of them in private homes. And bedbugs are not a sign of bad housekeeping or bad cleanliness or bad anything. They're a sign that somebody who had bedbugs had been there before you. And bedbugs are incredibly difficult to get rid of. We're blessed with having Ecolab here. My members spend tens of thousands of dollars a year on staff training to identify and remediate bedbugs. It is not something we should take for granted. And individual homeowners need the guidance, in our opinion, of being able to get some professional help to avoid that challenge. On an even more somber note, we had three lodging property fires in Minnesota last year, two of which resulted in a loss of life, and one of which is an example of what can happen to this kind of property. There was a former bed and breakfast in the city of New Ulm where the owner, because of cost, no longer did the regulatory work but continued to rent bedrooms as vacation home rentals. And in October last year, had a power failure allowed her guests to use candles. The building was completely burned and six people lost their lives. We do not know. We know it had not been inspected for some time as to whether it had the regulated number of smoke detectors and fire extinguishers, whether the exits were marked, whether egress windows from subgrade bedrooms were inspected as to how they worked. I don't say that because I want to scare homeowners or anyone else, but this isn't a simple business, and it does take some level of regulation. I do disagree with my friend Mr. Griffith that this makes it clear, because nothing in the bill amends Chapter 157 to remove the obligation of the Department of Health. I do agree with Bill that it is not our belief that a vacation home rental is public housing. And we would, I forget the legal word, Bill, stipulate to that in this discussion.
Public housing or public lodging?
Public lodging, excuse me. And I think that with more work, whether it's in the Health Committee or the Public Safety Committee or the Commerce Committee, we might be able to arrive at a agreement. Mr. Griffith indicated they had worked with cities and counties over the interim. They did not, however, we weren't involved with them, and we'd like to be, nor was Explore Minnesota Tourism or the Department of Health or the Department of Revenue. I'd also like to point out that one of the issues here is what's called the unit of rental, whether the unit of rental, as Mr. Griffith implied, is the entire home or whether it can be bedrooms. Now, I agree with him that a bed and breakfast is different because of the provision of a meal. But many places have difficulty with the regulation of what we used to call rooming houses. And this appears to us to leave open the possibility of vacation housing operating like a traditional rooming house, which is a higher public burden type of use for a home occupation.
Mr. McRoy, we're out of time, if you can finish up,
I'm almost done, Mr. Chair. And so we think in Lake County and Mille Lacs County, they limit not the occupancy, but the number of rentals per parcel. And if we have time to further work on this, and if Mr. Griffith's intention was there would be one renter per parcel, we may be able to work on that issue. But we agree with those who think that this is a highly complex issue. It's one that we should find a resolution to. But it is it's not my belief that this bill is in finished form as yet. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator McGuire has moved that 1190 be referred to referred to Commerce. The author is opposed to that motion. All in favor of the McGuire motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
No. Motion does not prevail.
Mr. Chair?
I'll renew my motion that 1190 be referred or be recommended to pass and placed on general orders. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
Okay, the motion prevails. The bill is passed and sent to general orders.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Good. We are adjourned.
If you're a homeowner, you're looking to have somebody stay in your home that's going to take care of it. If you're a broker...